Now, you know that people who get beaten up, they always have to blather on about their story. But what about the guy doing the beating? He's got a story too. Our next guest, amazing dude, when he told Mark Ristich that he had something to tell, it turned out that he really meant it. Supersensitive listeners should note that there is violence and a word that polite company never uses.
When George Garrett was just a little boy, he grew up in Berkeley, California.
I lived on 932 Grayson Street, and I lived upstairs in the back. And then I remember waking up every morning by a rooster. In my house, it was always soul music. My second oldest brother would be in the bathroom flexing. I must have been 6 years old or something like that. I had this dog, his name was Poochie. Okay. And my brothers brought him home, and me and him just hooked up, you know, right? There was like this car junkyard stuff. We'd go wandering through there, you know, and picking up stuff and, you know, like creeping into factories and seeing what they were doing with me and my dog, you know?
But where are you supposed to be?
Well, I guess I was supposed to be at school. I don't know. But, I mean, you know, it was like grade school.
So the people were telling George's mom he's skipping school. The teachers, the neighbors. But there wasn't much she could do about it during the day. You see, she had a full-time job in radiology at the VA hospital.
And the story goes, and the mother walked in with a master's degree, and they gave her a job as being an assistant. And her job was to train other people who came in there that were white, and those people ended up becoming her boss. You know, so she was hot. She was very angry, you know.
It doesn't take much to set her off. So when she comes home from work, Georgia knows what's coming.
Man, my mother would tie me to a doorknob and beat me until I was black and blue. And when it blistered, it just popped and she'd just keep on beating you. My mother was very violent. You know, she beat you into oblivion, you know. I remember telling people that. I said, you know, this woman is beating the hell out of me. And they would say to me, look, you know, you just got to do what your mama says. Oh, God. And probably my adventurism had a lot to do with me trying to get away from it.
So one day, George is out on the streets, walking the neighborhood, and a car pulls up.
I was walking across San Pablo Park. Two white guys came up and stopped me.
Cops.
Cops, you know. And they asked me how come I wasn't in school. And I think I told them I was on my way home. Well, you have to come with us.
They take George downtown, and they find out he hasn't been going to school. They investigate further, and they tell his mother, we're taking George away from you. Just like that, George leaves his brothers and sisters and begins a new life in detention.
I became a ward of the state. First, I ended up going to juvenile hall. Then I ended up in this place called Lincoln Home. And then I ended up going to the youth authority.
George gets on a bus with a bunch of other 10-year-old kids, and they're headed to Whittier, California, to a place called Nellis Correctional Facility.
Yeah, man. My first initiation into Nellis was when they sent us to orientation. I don't know, some Mexican guy was in front of me in rank because we would march, you know, to chow. And I got in some altercation. He kicked me dead in my balls and put a right cross across me, and I fell to the ground. And they just marched away. And I was lying there holding myself. Oh, that was my initiation. I said, uh-oh.
Welcome
to the Youth Authority.
How big were you when you came in?
I wasn't that big, you know. But when I know that's how they fought, I adapted. You know, I got in a fight with one guy. He was tough, you know. But out of fear, I had to make him more fearful because I was scared of him.
So what'd you do with this guy?
Well, I went after him when he was asleep and beat his ass.
They take George away to lockup. It's like solitary confinement. But while he's in there, he decides that wasn't enough. He has to teach the guy a real lesson.
I got another fight with him. But this time, I knocked him out. That's what I was a knockout artist. I would hit you right in your temple. It would knock you out. The creep would always be come up behind him and hit him in the temple.
Wait, the creep?
There was these guys, man, that would creep up behind you and hit you in the temple and knock you out. And you wouldn't know who did it. That's what boxers are always protecting themselves from. That little place right there, there's no bone there, you see, and knock you out. The other one's the throat. Hit him in the throat. Bam, just like that. You know, all right. The other one's the balls. The balls, the throat, the here.
Okay. Temple.
The temple. Yeah, yeah. I have amassed these skills here. You know, the first thing I realized that I could do well. I was real proud of that. You know, I could defend myself in here, you know? I couldn't defend myself, you know, under my mother.
Yeah.
But these, I stomp them to the ground, you know, okay? I mean, they're all criminals, man.
But what, now, look, you haven't done anything wrong, really. The only thing you ever really did was not go to school. You're not really a criminal.
No.
And what are you thinking all through this time when you're moving from place to place?
I'm about to cry, man. Yeah.
Okay. You want something? Water?
Oh, I got water.
Oh, George. You're just such a big, tough guy.
Yeah.
To me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So that's how you come across.
Well, that's to protect this.
At the age of 13, George is too big for Nellis. Now, he gets sent up to Paso.
Paso, to me, was prison. You know, it was the prison before you got to prison. You know, and then you had these race gang. They wanted to dominate everybody. You know, they were bullies. That's what they were. They were bullies. You know, I was like an upstart. He said, man, you know, who chose you guys to be leaders of the black nation? I would go like that to him.
And so in retaliation, the leaders of the firm put George on the shine. That's where no one is supposed to talk to you and no one has your back. The only ones that do talk to him are the brothers in the Nation of Islam. And so as he's fighting off guys from the firm, one by one by one,
they were saying to me, there's no way you're gonna win. I mean, you might win the fights, but you're not gonna win. You know, you'll get older, and then, you know, then it'll be something more deadly, and they'll just kill you. They told me that, you know, maybe I should just go do all my time in lockup. And that's what I did. And I was out of there in less than 6 months.
You were out of Paso.
I was out of Paso.
Where'd you go?
Well, I went home, back to Grayson Street.
In Berkeley.
My parole officer was there. And my mother regretted this later on, saying, she says, you know, these people told me that he was going to be in jail until he was 21 years old. Well, now what the hell was I supposed to do with him? Here he is. What am I supposed to do with him now? Nah, I got on her ass about that later on. I think she was afraid when I think about it.
You were big now.
I was big now.
And
hard. I was on 37th and Grove Street. I was going to go see my girlfriend, Ruby Smith. And this guy was coming up the street. He was macking up the street, I should say, walking, this way of walking. He was big. He's real big. He said, yeah, man, you remember me. You Goggy B, right? Guys from the youth authority, they call me Goggy B. And I looked at him, and I couldn't recognize him. And he swung at me. I remember I backed off because I was alarmed. He swung at me again, and I just knocked him out. I was real good at that. You know, I mean, I could still feel the anger of the force in which I did it. I mean, it just was like automatic. I remember I left him there lying on the pavement, half on the sidewalk, half in the street. And I went on over to see my girlfriend. I never said anything to her about it. The other time I got in a fight was right in front of Doggy Diners in Richmond. I bought a hot dog. And this guy came up and mentioned the guy that I had fought in Oakland, you know, and he was a friend of his, and, you know, and he was going to back his front. He went to lunch, and I just knocked him out just like that. Boom. Just, that was it. You know, and I was in school, and, you know, this white boy called me, and I knocked him out, and I ended up back in the youth authority. I wound up going to Preston.
For George, Preston was better than Paso. The counselors there actually talked to you.
Oh, we were playing, you know, where you throw the ball at the guy, dodgeball. I went crazy, you know. And this counselor pulled me in and he says to me, you can't carry on being like this, man. You can't carry on being, this angry, this violent, you know? I don't even think you're angry, you know? I think you just enjoy the violence, you know? You gotta stop that, man. You gotta stop that. You know, you can't continue doing that. That got me.
And so finally, after 6 months, George is free. Out of the youth authority, never to return. Instead, he finds a new culture in Berkeley by the university, right in the middle of the 1960s.
When I got out of the youth authority, I kind of couldn't hang out with the people I grew up with. So, you know, I would hang out with people that would accept me, and the vast majority of those people that would accept me were heroin addicts. Yeah, heroin addicts that were students and whatnot on Telegraph Avenue. They would give me a place to stay. You know, I could always sleep on the couch. I would hustle books that they couldn't get, you know. I was doing stuff. I was hanging out with them, you know, in a way. I did run into guys that were still in the firm and wanted to get me. So, you know, now a lot of these guys would confront me. You know, it's okay, you know, you got to be. I had an intellect. I had to talk to them, you know. You still want to come up here and thump with me? That was 1,000 miles ago, man. You still want to come up here and thump with me? So that's kind of how it was on Telegraph Avenue, and that was cool. I like that, you know? I could do all my dirt. I could do anything I wanted, right? And I just didn't have to be violent. So almost 20 years later, I had a nephew who had some trouble in school, had some trouble with his own mother, you know, and he was living at his grandmother's house, which was my mother. And you could see he was sort of struggling with trying to study. My mother walked in and said, well, let me help you. You know, and you can see, I can feel, you know, even when I was in the kitchen listening, you know, he didn't want to do that. And she would say, you know, you're not stupid. Just tell me what it said, because you're not stupid. Don't act stupid with me. Now, what does it say? And I walked into the room and said, what are you doing? She jumped up and ran out of the room. Later on, you know, I said to her, you know, you did that crap with me. You can't continue doing that sort of stuff. And I think, you know, she started getting violent with me. And I remember I said, you know, I held her arms back. I said, what are you doing? And she says, I could put my hands on you anytime. I said, oh, Mom, you know, you got to stop this crap. You know, I'm like 40 years old and here you are, you know, some, you know, 75, 80. What is wrong with you? You know, out of all the fights I've ever been in, if someone said anything to me about my mother, I'd bust them up. And now I'm like 64 years old. I think I understand her far more than what I did then, you know? So do we have everything?
I think we do. We got, this is the end of the Knockout Artist. This is my take. And
but I still got that blade in me.
I'm not saying you don't. I'm not saying you don't, but you stopped using your fists. Or did you? Who's the last guy you whooped?
The last time was the guy, man. I was working on a construction site, and this guy, man, you know, he discriminated. He fired me because he wanted to hire some other guy, you know, and he says, well, you know, you're lazy. You're just anyways, something like that. He took my check, and he balled it up, and he threw it in my face. So I found out where he lived. One night, I got in my car and I drove over to his place, dropped a block away from him, you know, and he had a one-story house. I remember this. Now, I'm like, what, 23? I was fantastic. It was raining, you know. And this is around about, what, 2, 3 in the morning. I jump up and grab the gutter. Swung myself on top of the roof, and I'm walking on the roof, man. Stomping and walking on the roof, you know. I can hear him come down the thing, and I can see him come out of the thing. I swung down off the roof and beat his butt. He took my belt off and just beat the hell out of him and stomped and then walked on to got my car and drove away. That was the last fight I was ever in. Oh, I love that. Oh, see, that blade is still in me. It's still there. You have no idea sometimes when I really got to control that. You know, but over time, I have. I can do that. I know what I try to do other things, you know. Yeah, yeah. It's taken me years, man, to get that out, man. Wild one, you're a rebel, and they say you're just no good.
Thank you so much, George Garrett, for sharing your story with The Snap. It was produced by Mark Ristich.